Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Curious Mind podcast. My name is Gabriel Ellis. I'm a psychologist, a psychotherapist, and a Buddhist scholar. And in this podcast, I investigate topics that relate to healing, to therapy, to spirituality, or to the philosophy of mind. Today is another cross topic that I think includes all of these different aspects. I covered a similar topic some years ago, but I want to update it and to repeat the important elements today again, because they are very essential and I think they affect many therapeutic or in general healing processes. The topic is what I see as the preconditions for therapeutic healing. And this is, I think, relevant whether you do a formal therapy with someone or you are just generally in a therapeutic process yourself. So when it comes to therapy, there are so many different opinions, different techniques and approaches, and sometimes it seems like there is nothing that we can definitely say regardless of the circumstances. In fact, there are so many aspects where sometimes I'm asked, is this good or is this good? This approach, this technique, this perspective. And very often I have to say, well, as such, I cannot say if something is good or not. It depends on the case and it depends on the life situation where someone is. So the question then remains, are there things at all that we can generally say are good or beneficial? And this is what I want to cover today. In my experience, there are a few principles that we can apply to healing processes. Again, regardless if it's in a formal therapeutic setting or just by myself. But those three principles that I want to discuss a little bit, they need to come in a package. They cannot be in isolation. And I hope to show also why that is necessarily the case. The first precondition, the first aspect or principle that I think is beneficial in itself in this package is a sober and unbiased assessment of my life situation, or in other words, an honesty and a truthfulness towards myself. Why? Because obviously, if I'm running into issues today that I cannot solve with the resources or the information that I have, it means that my old answers are not valid anymore. I need to find something new. I need to find inner truths that open up to myself so that I get more and a clearer perspective of where I should go next and what specifically I should do. So I need to understand more. I need to understand more where I am now in my life. I need to be honest regarding the question, what is going well in my life and what not? Which needs I currently have that are met? Which needs I have that are not met? Which values I actually want to implement in my life? And I need to be honest to myself in the question if I think I can do it alone, or if it's better to do it with somebody, to open up towards dear friends. It can be a partner, it can be a therapeutic process with a therapist. The fact is that usually we are quite sloppy with ourselves. Without knowing it, we lie to ourselves on numerous different topics, sometimes very important topics. And often enough, we do this also for a good reason. So, for example, if we have problems in our relationship, we choose to ignore the fact that we are dissatisfied now because acting on it might come at a hefty price. Often I work with couples or individuals who are in a relationship. They own real estate together, they have young kids together. To allow myself to understand and to see honestly that the relationship is not going well automatically leads to the question, okay, so what should I do about it? And this question, what should I do about it, is dangerously close to the possibility that this relationship might have to end. And then I'm standing there in precarious economic and emotional situations when it comes to income, when it comes to the kids, for example. And I might look back and think, oh, why did I open my mouth? Why did I say something? It wasn't that bad after all. So in that sense, there are good reasons why I sometimes am not fully aware and honest to myself about how the state of affair is for me. I gave the example of relationships. It's similar with work. If I am in a somewhat unsatisfying work situation, also then to be very honest to myself might lead to the question, okay, what do I need to change? And that might turn out to be a difficult proposition. And then I'm stuck there. I have my honesty, but I find no way to act on it. And then what should I be dissatisfied all the time? So it's a difficult proposition to be unbiased towards myself, to be honest towards myself. But at the same time, when it comes to a therapeutic process, I think we need to understand, and I encourage you to reflect critically on that. If I am not completely honest with myself, what are the possibilities for me actually healing and finding new solutions to problems that got me stuck? So there is a pragmatic argument for being unbiased, for being completely honest and truthful to myself, which is I need to find new information, new tools, new approaches in order to tackle my old or existing problems. This is the pragmatic aspect. I need to find something new. Beyond that, there is also a psychological aspect and a psychological reason, which is that if I am honest to myself, if I'm truthful to myself, that opens up the possible connection, the compatibility to aspects of myself that I don't encounter, that I don't have contact with. To put it differently, things that are stored up and suppressed in the unconscious become accessible to me. Maybe not immediately, but eventually it turns into that. Let me summarize it by this topic of being truthful to myself, this precondition for healing. Let me summarize it by formulating more clearly the challenges that it comes with. The first challenge is accepting what I see versus my self-ideal. And often enough, people operate on the basis, what cannot be true isn't true. If I find out something that makes me look bad in my self-image, I rather don't want to know. This is the first challenge, to overcome that bias, that inability to deal with finding out something ugly about myself. Mastering this challenge means to understand who I am now, what my life situation is now, regardless of what my ideal about myself, the relationship, the work situation, etc. is. And to extend this also to the past, looking back to past conflicts between me and somebody in the family, in the relationship, at work, or conflicts that I had with myself, and understand also retrospectively that I was not fully aware of my contribution to the issue. There is a childish response to finding faults. I need to overcome that. The childish response is, if I suffer, then it must be someone else's fault. So I go into blaming. In an unbiased perspective, that needs to stop. I stop blaming. I'm more interested in actual understanding, not in whose fault it is. There is also the opposite of that, a pseudo-adult position, an attitude of, oh, this is all my fault. The relationship issue that I have right now, my mental issues separately, my work issues, everything is up to me. Because, let's face it, there is, especially also in the social media realm, there is often an attitude floating around that you are the maker of your destiny. It's only up to you. So if there is fault, only you are to blame. And this is psychologically damaging because it ignores the different aspects, the external influences that are there, the influences of economic hardship and restrictions, for example, the influence that other people have on us, to completely blame everything, to blame myself for everything, is psychologically unrealistic and therefore unhealthy. The goal is, in this precondition, to really see the things as for what they are, as far as I can. And saying this, I understand that in my future reflections, I might see things differently. This is why I would phrase it, this principle, as I don't want to lie to myself. I don't know what the truth is. Truth is a difficult concept anyway. I might approach more and more truthfulness with time. But what I can do is catching myself in a lie and stopping that and facing the apparent truth at that situation at that time. This is the first challenge. The second challenge is, when I find truths, when I have insights, not to slip into evaluation, not to slip into judgment, and the necessary emotional response that comes from that. So the insight, in certain situations, I lie, for example, in this stage of being truthful to myself or not lying to myself. The insight, in certain situations, I lie should not lead to, oh, that makes me sad. I found out that I'm a liar in many more situations than I thought. And this is so sad. And now I have to retreat into myself. I have to deal with my guilt and so forth. This is something, this evaluation, the judgment, and the emotionality that comes out of that is something that we have to stop ourselves from. Because if we don't restrict it, the way that the mind works is automatically slipping into evaluation, into judgment, and into emotion. So what we do is we consciously remind ourselves as much as we can, stay in the observation, stay in the observation. Don't judge, don't evaluate, just see things for as and how they are, which is difficult enough. The reason behind that is, or to put it differently, sometimes people are worried that, okay, if I don't judge, if I don't evaluate, and I find new things out about myself and my life situation, doesn't it mean that I stay stuck there? Like, I started this whole therapeutic process in order to improve, to get out of the suffering, to solve problems. So now you're telling me I shouldn't evaluate and I shouldn't judge? That doesn't make sense to me. The psychological response for that is, again, first, you need to find out. You need to find out what is there in order to base the new, better actions, the new solutions, to base them on better information. I need to find out. Second, first, psychologically, I need to accept. Why do I need to accept psychologically? Because I can assume that every one of us is more or less internally, psychologically fragmented, which means we identify with certain aspects of ourselves, and other aspects of ourselves we don't like. And what happens when we don't like something inside our experience? We try to push it away. There is a certain resentment and aggressive energy behind that. Now, from the perspective of the unconscious is just processing. The unconscious doesn't know good, bad, healthy, unhealthy. It just does what it does. It's a machine in that sense. What it senses, though, is that the conscious mind, that the ego, doesn't like something. What it does then is to restrict the access of the conscious mind to this thing. Basically, the unconscious is saying, okay, if you don't like what I have to say, I will stop mentioning that. Or I will say it in a very convoluted, indirect way. I stop your easy access to that part. From our perspective, our conscious perspective, it means fragmentation. The unconscious took a certain aspect, for example, me lying on many occasions. It takes that aspect and puts it into a vault and says, okay, you don't like to see it, then I will not offer it to you. My challenge is, as the subject, the person who wants to heal, who wants to develop, that in order to have a really wholesome, beneficial psychological development, I need to have access to all those parts in me that the unconscious has closed me off from. And again, it did it because I didn't want to see it. So what I have to do, connected with the truthfulness, the principle of truthfulness that I apply, is I welcome. I create an atmosphere, an inner atmosphere of welcoming everything that is true about myself. This is an essential first part. And once I came to a place of more or less accepting everything that I find, a unification takes place that is in itself wholesome and enables me to move forward as an unfragmented subject, then applying a technique, then doing something about the things that I don't like, is a very different topic. Because then all of me is unified, or most of me, let's not be too idealistic, most of me is unified, ready to move in a direction without friction, without backfiring, without being too blinded about the aspects that are closed off from me. If I try to move on without this basic acceptance, only very few parts of me will want to move on. All those other aspects that the unconscious has blocked up from me will stay fragmented, will stay separated, and they will effectively make it impossible for those few other aspects that want to move forward, they will make it impossible to move forward. I can simply not surgically separate myself and the parts that want to develop and to heal and to be brave and to know and so all of these. I cannot surgically sever, I cannot surgically separate them from those aspects that have been suppressed, fragmented, and isolated. There is one small exception that I would make in the therapeutic reality. Sometimes people are in a lot of pain. They suffer a lot from an acute crisis, for example, or from a chronic depression, for example, or chronic pain and anxiety that really holds them back and reduces their quality of life in a way that they have difficulties to function at all. Under these circumstances, it's good to push a healing, a development that is even against the parts that have been suppressed. This is difficult to do it in a sustainable way, but it is possible for a short period of time to stabilize my state of mind, to stabilize the clients, to help them to move into temporarily into a healthier place out of which they can form again, reflect better, so that they are not constantly held back and absorbed by their pain, by all those thoughts that they have, by their blaming, the guilt, the hopelessness, the desperation, the numbness, and so on. Because in order to move on, we need to have those resources. We need to feel relatively good about ourselves. So in those situations, those periods of crisis, I would say there is an exception to the rule that I first need to integrate all those parts together before I move on. In those cases, I move on, leaving some parts behind in the hopes that the short-term improvement gives me resources to then collect myself, to then integrate the other parts that have been fragmented and separated. The third challenge that I have with this principle is that what looks as an honest and truthful observation can lead to an automatic mindset of self-destruction. What I mean with that is when I think that I'm just looking at myself and my life in a sober way, and even, for example, me as a therapist, I ask them, so are you just observing or are you judging yourself? They might honestly say, I'm just observing. What they don't realize that very often in what comes in a package of supposedly sober and objective observation, there is a subtle undertone of negativity, of repulsion, of resentment that is included in that. And we cannot help it. It's connected with what it's automatically somehow in the package of honest observation, there is a slight negativity. What we do to counteract that is we induce positivity into the process of honest observation in order to make sure that there is no subtle negativity. The subtle negativity will hold us back. It will make it very difficult to A, observe, B, to change. So what we do there is we do a benevolent acceptance, a benevolent objective observation. And this actually leads me to the second principle. So here we leave behind the truthfulness as an aspect, as a precondition. And it leads to the second part, which is benevolence and goodwill towards myself and others. And here, I hope you already see how at least those first two principles, those preconditions, they are connected. If I focus too much on the pure truthfulness, honesty, sobriety, objectivity, I will overlook the subtle negativity that comes with it. And that will block my process. So it necessitates, it requires the second principle of benevolence and goodwill towards myself and towards others, towards this whole endeavor to make sure that what I find out is imbued with an energy that allows me to continue. So this is a protective shield against the subtle negative aspects of being truthful to myself, and a benevolence and positivity will additionally open up other inner resources, the resources that allow me to invite those fragmented aspects, those closed off, suppressed aspects, to invite them to the table so that they all start to connect, to mingle, to relate to each other, and thus become fluid and changeable. Also, here we have challenges, and I could identify three major challenges with this precondition of benevolence and goodwill towards myself. The first is that people, especially when they are not in a good place, they don't think that they deserve to be liked or to be loved, or if they are in a state of blaming others for their predicament, they don't think that they deserve the goodwill and the benevolence. What people do when they are in such a state of finding themselves not deserving to be loved is that they misunderstand benevolence as a concept. They think that benevolence is a limited resource. They treat it as a resource that, you know, some sort of attention that they that is limited when we deal with outside forces, and they don't see that when it comes to the inner logic, benevolence has an is required in an unlimited way. To deserve love is a thinking of objective social realities. Somebody deserves payment because they have done well. When it comes about being loved, being respected, being valued, this is not something that depends on deserving. So then people say, okay, but look, I observed myself. I found out that I'm not a good person. In fact, this is what I've been thinking for a long time. I cannot turn myself into someone who believes that I deserve this. The misunderstanding here is that it's not about myself. It's more a perspective on humanity in general, on people in general. And when I think about anyone who is in pain, anyone who is struggling, who wants to heal, who wants to improve themselves, I think that as a general attitude, the response of the heart is that I wish them well. If I hear that someone has been a bad person, but they're on the path of recovery, I wish them well. Maybe there is a resentment and I think they should pay for what they've done in some way, but the heart, it cannot help but to feel sorry for someone who truly wants to improve. So this is the base. This is what I'm basing myself on. This is what I'm basing my benevolence on a general attitude, on the value that if someone wants to heal, if someone wants to improve, if someone wants to get out of suffering, I support them. And because of this general attitude, because I would treat friends like this, strangers like this, because of that, I treat myself as well in a benevolent way. I comment my wish to better myself, to heal. I comment on it with a resounding, yes, I wish myself well, just as I would wish a friend well or a stranger who tries to improve themselves. A second challenge is, so this was the first challenge of people who think that they don't deserve to be better. We have to overcome that, obviously. The second challenge that many people express is that they don't have time or money for this process. I don't have the money for therapy, or I don't have the time because of my to-dos, my responsibilities and obligations, neither for therapy nor for thinking freely or reading or, you know, talking to friends. And by that, when we have this kind of attitude of limited resources, something that I already mentioned, I mistake my allocation of resources for obligations, to-dos, career goals, and so on. I mistake that for what I need to, or how I need to approach myself. So there is a conventional logic. The conventional logic is I just don't have time for certain things, which is true for outward, for conventional reality. But there is a logic of the subjective spirit. And the logic of the subjective spirit is that if the mind is not loved, is not supported, is not benevolently acted upon, this mind is confused, it's insecure, it will look outward for support, it will be needy, it will be dependent on others to get value, to get positivity, and it will be depressed eventually. So when we look at the logic of the subjective spirit, not the conventional reality that is true for the outside, it becomes clear that I simply have no alternative. And it's not a matter of time, it's not a matter of resources. If I don't act upon myself, if I don't address my wishes for well-being with an attitude of benevolence, I will simply have very little chance to bring about a change that, after all, is supposed to improve my quality of life. So the challenge is to overcome the attitude that I don't have time to focus on these things. There is no alternative. If I don't do it, I will be confused and I will not be able even to address my daily obligations properly. I will just lose and dissipate energy that I don't even have anymore. So there is no alternative. And by the way, it's not necessarily a question of putting a lot of time into it. It's really more an insight that then might even act on autopilot so that it adds benevolence and positivity to many other mental activities that I automatically act on. There's a third challenge when it comes to benevolence and goodwill towards myself, which is that people say, I don't know how. I tried this technique. There is loving kindness meditation. I tried affirmations of in the morning, standing in front of the mirror and telling me myself 10 times that I'm worthy, capable, lovable, and so on. And here is a fundamental misunderstanding of what actually goodwill towards myself, positivity towards myself means. Again, what it should be and what reflects the inner truth is that people who don't have that, they feel negativity towards themselves, meaning if I'm not positive towards myself, I will have feelings of guilt, of self-criticism, and so on. So there is something in the mind. It can be actual thoughts, I'm stupid, I'm an idiot. It might be feelings that are representations of these thoughts and attitudes. But it's not true that the opposite has the same form. Positivity does not have the form of I am great, the thoughts of I'm perfect, I'm totally worthy. The opposite of having negative thoughts is the absence of negative thoughts. So someone who is content with themselves, someone who would qualify from an outside observation of someone who really treats themselves well and respect themselves, if we ask them, what is your attitude to yourself? Do you love yourself? Actually, they would have to answer truthfully, I don't know what you mean. I'm just living my life. Like I have issues, I have to deal with work, I have to deal with career, and so on. Yeah, I don't judge myself. I don't hate myself, but it does not mean that I wake up in the morning and want to hug myself. And, I look in the mirror and I fall in love with the person that is. That is a misunderstanding of the concept of self-love. What it actually means is that whatever I do has an undercurrent of confidence, belief, of worthiness. But it usually doesn't emanate, it doesn't come up as a distinct thought that I'm super proud of myself, that I love myself, and so on. This is much more compensation for people, and it can be for a while a good tool. It's a compensation for people who actually suffer from criticizing themselves, hating themselves, and so on. And technical aspect of what is necessary in order to really implement benevolence and goodwill towards myself is to observe what is going on inside of me, to detect what is negative, to detect criticism, to detect pain, and so on, and then to own it. What I mean is that usually when I look inside myself and I find critical voices, things that I don't like, and so on, they seem very rigid. They seem as if they are forced upon me or forced upon me by my unconscious, that I'm thrown into it, but basically it is not me. It feels alien, it feels like a negative kind of attachment to myself that has been attached not by me, but by my unconscious, by circumstances, by other people. Like my parents, for example, taught me to only be satisfied myself when I achieved the best results in school, university, and so on. So this is what I do now with myself, but it's the fault of my parents, right? So it's, I externalize. And even if I don't do that, those aspects, they just feel alien to me. Those voices that keep hammering the negative self-judgment on me, they seem alien to me. I want to get rid of them. Then doesn't feel like me. What I need to do with the practice of benevolence and goodwill is to see those inner aspects, those judgments, feelings, moods, words, sentences, and so on, and I make them mine. I regard them. I see them with an attitude of, this is surely part of me. I can have access to it. This is me. This is part of me that makes this judgment. So what seems as alien, actually, I in this practice, I re-own. I did it to myself based on circumstances in the past. The result was pain. I pushed away the pain. It seems alien, and now I need to reverse that. Oh, this is me. Without knowing it, I'm creating those judgments. Without knowing it, without knowing how, I create moods, emotions, and so on that are negative. And so I reverse that. And it's difficult to express. People who meditate, they know this process. I reverse that by approaching an attitude of, I don't know how, but this is me. It's just a statement. What is again important here is that I do that without judgment. What I mean with that is often enough, this is very little of what I'm saying here is new. Maybe the connections I make are somewhat novel. Often enough in spirituality, people say, yeah, this is your mind. You need to take responsibility for it. Everything that happens within you, like I said in the beginning, is you. So you're responsible. You're to blame for whatever is happening inside of you. This attitude comes with a judgment. So you're bad if you did not achieve positivity yet, if you didn't achieve unification of your mind yet. This is what we leave behind. This is completely incompatible with an attitude of benevolence. What I do instead is I look inside myself. I see the aspects that are rigid, that don't seem to be me. For example, the voices, I'm bad, I'm negative, and so on. I approach them with benevolence. This is the big difference. I don't approach them with a judgment of I need to control it or I need to get rid of this. I approach it with surely you separated, fragmented, rigid aspect, surely you are me. And I don't know how I did it, but I separated you from me. I want to get close to you again. In fact, you are part of me. When I do this successfully and with some practice, I will get an inner intuition of how to do this. What was rigid, what was external in my inside world, those thoughts, feelings, moods, and so on, suddenly they become semi-transparent, or they become fluid, they become accessible. And with that, they change the nature. What seemed rigid, judgmental, harsh, and so on, suddenly becomes accessible. And the underlying resentment that is implied in the rigid alien feeling aspect, that disappears. And suddenly it opens up, for example, possibilities to look back and to see situations where I judge myself harshly or other judge me and so on. It becomes effectively a magic box. Now, there is the danger of idealizing what I say right now and to think, oh yes, the spiritual journey, the therapeutic journey is full of wonders and so on. I really mean it in a very factual sense. There is a technical aspect of approaching my alienated parts with humility, with compassion, with benevolence, and then those aspects are changing. It doesn't have to be accompanied by a real insight. Some people don't feel very consciously the fluidity, the flexibility, the transparency that comes with this shift in approaching those alien parts, but they later report that they feel fine. So what I'm saying is more a look behind the curtain. For some people, it is very conscious what is happening. For some people, it's even accompanied with a sense of wonder and awe of how a different approach towards myself can lead to such a different outcome. But for some people, it is not necessarily so. What is nonetheless necessary in either of those cases is that I stay firm in my benevolence. I stay firm in my wish for myself to be well, to be free of pain, to heal, to feel better, to be better adjusted, or whatever word form you want to put it. And this leads actually into the third aspect. The third aspect is taking responsibility for what I found. And this is such an important aspect of the benevolence that I mentioned before, the active aspect of benevolence, the taking responsibility for finding something that I don't accept, that I resent on the inside, to act on it with benevolence. It is so important that benevolence and taking responsibility become intrinsically connected. And here again, you see an aspect of why I said in the beginning that those three aspects come in a package. I cannot do just benevolence if I don't take responsibility for what I found. I cannot do just honesty without being benevolent because of the undercurrent resentment that comes with an overly sober or pseudo objective approach. So this is why the three of them come in a package. So this third aspect of taking responsibility and applying what I found, this is the aspect of change. Now, this needs an attitude of courage. Courageous I have to be because taking responsibility always puts me in a certain dilemma. It empowers me, but it gives me the responsibility of foreseeing or accepting the consequences of my actions. And I have to add the consequences of my non-actions. For whatever I do, I pay a price. I pay a price for staying the same. I pay a price for changing. Let's say in my sober observation, I found out that my relationship is not doing well. I approach the parts that I've suppressed about myself, about my partner, with benevolence. I've done that. I'm acting on it in the sense that I'm willing to integrate. And now the question comes up, do I want to change my communication with my partner? Is it, in spite of the benevolence and the acceptance, is it beyond the point of repair? Is this what my honest analysis comes to? Or are there good reasons to continue the relationship? Are there good reasons to continue the relationship without saying anything? And all of this might be true in depending on the case. What I have to do is to understand that for doing something, saying something, not doing something, not saying something, that all of them come with a possible price. And I need to ask myself, which price am I rather willing to pay? And this is the difficult job of responsibility. Now, that would be maybe easy enough in certain isolated topics, but the more encompassing I make my investigation about my life and applying responsibility for that, for the outcomes of my investigations, you see that suddenly the list of taking responsibility can become quite long and about very important aspects of my life. And here again, I really, truly need my honest assessment, my truthfulness, and a very healthy dosage of benevolence towards myself and others. Otherwise, I would not have the resources, the capabilities to deal with all those responsibilities that I have seen, that I want to own. The same if I'm dealing not with relationships, but with work or with my private life, with friendships, and so on. The second challenge here is that taking responsibility stands somewhat in a conflict with my objective reasoning. When I look at my situation objectively, my tendency is to say, look, I'm not responsible for everything. They have been parents. There have been socioeconomic situations. There have been political realities. How is it that I am supposed to take responsibility for what I have found, changing it within myself and neglecting or ignoring those outside circumstances? And here we are in a certain dilemma between the outside objective reality and the logic of the subjective spirit. Again, we come again and again when we are on a healing journey, on a therapeutic journey, or a spiritual journey, we come again and again to this division line between an outside world that has its logic and an inside world that has its logic, and both are separate. On the outside level, there is something like a society. There are political structures. There are laws. There are ways to communicate differently. There are the responsibilities of the contributions of others to the way that I think and feel. That is all correct. But psychologically and spiritually, I need to approach those topics as if it is in my full hands. Again, not in the sense of controlling, not in the sense of judging myself for not being able to access those parts and change them, but I need to attribute to myself a potential to access all of those parts, to infuse them with positivity and benevolence, and to make them part of my journey. This is psychologically what, or spiritually, if you will, what is absolutely necessary. It is necessary in therapy. It is necessary when I encounter any obstacles in my meditation practice. So again, as I said before, in the aspect of benevolence, I look at things as, this is me, this is mine. And because this is mine, this is changeable. And what is changeable is my reactions to what I find. For example, I find a feeling of negativity towards my parents, towards the world, towards myself. I cannot immediately change that. There is no button that I can press that turns a negative feeling into a positive feeling. What I can do is I change the way that I react to it. And I put it in a little bit cliche, but maybe simple terms. I see this feeling and I approach it with, I don't understand you yet, but you are part of me. I want to relate to you. Come closer to me. I will hold you. Or take me to where you are coming from so that I understand, because I want to stay connected to you. This is the practical application of taking responsibility for what I have found. And following such a feeling, I will develop compassion and empathy for it. Understanding, oh, I engaged, I started, I free willingly got into a relationship that was difficult because I wanted to be loved. I wanted to feel that I'm accepted by anyone. I was that desperate at the time. And so I have compassion to myself. I develop compassion with my partner who has their own struggle, who has no way to know me better. And now a path opens up for, okay, what do I want to do with it? First about myself, my understanding, my new understanding of this feeling, approach it with positivity. And now I have the possibilities to talk, to act, to not talk, to not act. This is what taking responsibility means. This is from the perspective of the subject, and there is the perspective of the unconscious. Again, if it is approached by me like that, that I want to connect, that I want to be part of it, that it's a collaboration, a benevolent collaboration, it will become transparent, it will become fluid towards me, it will become more accessible. The inner world will open up to me. And this, after all, is what this journey is supposed to be, the journey of healing. The therapeutic or even spiritual journey is supposed to lead to and be accompanied by a transparency and openness towards myself. So I hope you enjoyed my deliberations and my observations about the preconditions for therapeutic healing, which are, in order to summarize again, a sober and unbiased assessment towards my life, towards myself, a benevolence and goodwill towards myself and others, and taking responsibility for what I have found out. Thank you, and see you next time.